There's a pair of socks in the front row up here that would be the sermon if I could just take a picture and show them to you. I would just sit down and that would be it. Red socks with white lightning stripes in the front row. Those are fantastic, John. Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. How can that be? How could that be? How could that be? Seminary is a mixed blessing. On the one hand, the person shows up to that experience, I'll use I statements, I showed up to that experience on fire, ready to roll. It felt more or less like I could sort of discern God anywhere, at any time, in any person. Sort of on fire, right? The house of life was full and infused with the presence of the Holy. Easy to see it. And then you go to seminary. And you start to learn that there's ways to kind of cultivate that, right? There's ways to contain it and to nurture it. And it's easy in the midst of that formation to begin to confuse the container with God. It's easy to do. It was easy for me to do. It was easy to assume that right liturgy, right doctrine, right hermeneutics, proper vestments, of course, that all of that somehow supplanted the original confidence that God was everywhere at all times in all places, regardless of this thing that we do called church life together. Right? Theoretically, you go to seminary to learn how to cultivate a church life. It's easy to get those things confused, and I don't want to diminish seminary at all, and I certainly don't want to beat it up. It was a fantastic time, but for me, in my own head, I came out of there with some mixed messages. And it's possible that some of us have similar messages, particularly those who've been in the church a while. We might sometimes confuse church for God. We might. And that's dangerous. I'll be the first to say it. It's being recorded. It will be on the internet, and the Title IV reports will start showing up this afternoon. But it's important that we're absolutely clear about the difference. It's important we're clear about the relationship, right? But they're different. Consider it a Venn diagram of sorts. Church gets it right once in a while. And there's that sweet spot where we show up and we do these things that we consider normative. And somewhere in that sweet spot, we facilitate the recognition of God, who is always among us in this house of life. Right? And the task is to see if we can't get those circles to overlap more and more and more until, in fact, there is no real huge difference. Right? But that, of course, would be the world, that we've given you all a sacramental sensibility so that you leave this place, and any place you go, your eyes are wide open, your heart on fire for the presence of God in those places at all times, so that you can say, surely the Lord is in this place, and I know it. That's why we do this stuff. That's why we put all this time and energy into committees and budgets and buildings and committees. It's why we do all of that stuff. It's because we need a workshop where together we can come together and figure out how we have eyes and ears and hearts and minds to discern the presence of God in the world around us. And the mixed blessing of seminary for me was that it can suggest for folks like me, and perhaps for folks, church folk, it can suggest that there are places where God is and where God is not. And as soon as we do that, we get ourselves on a slippery slope. Slippery slope. It's what's taken over the culture around us, right? That the possibility that there's God in some places and not in others, or that God is for some folks and not for others, right? And all of a sudden, we get put in this funny role of wondering if to be faithful means to nurture the whole garden, or if to be faithful means we're really supposed to pluck up the weeds. Which means we have to think that we know the mind of God, and that we know who are the weeds and who are the flowers. That's dangerous. That's slippery. And the scripture today suggests to us that before we jump too far down that road into being faithful for the sake of God, that we slow down just a little bit, that we imagine the possibility that our desire and our zeal to do the right thing, pluck up the weeds, may cause more damage than is helpful. Right? So we're asked to just be patient. We're asked to be thoughtful and kind and compassionate and understanding, maybe even appreciative, maybe even advocates for the other, maybe even self-reflective, maybe even imaginative enough to think there may be some of those weeds right here inside of me, not just around me. But we would have to slow down long enough to imagine that, to allow that to be our worldview. Because this is all about discernment. The scripture is all about discernment. It's about worldview. How do we understand what God's up to in the world around us? And therefore, how do we understand what our role is in relationship to that God? Right? What does faithfulness look like? Does faithfulness look like that kind of zeal that's ready to get out there and clean up the garden and make nice straight rows and make sure that we're part of saying who's in and who's out? Or is faithfulness about showing up with a posture of wonder and curiosity? What if that's what faithfulness looks like? What if faithfulness is about showing up to a place where you're not completely sure if God's there and you just sit long enough to listen to the story of another person's life, to the story of another community's experience, and listen for the presence of God there and be surprised by it? What if you let yourself just sleep in the presence of mystery and let God just show up? What if you shut off your mind that's trying so hard to create order out of apparent disorder? And what if you just sat with it for a little bit? You might be different. The world around you might look different. The God you think you're following might show up differently and unexpectedly. But we'd have to slow down. We'd have to resist the urge for order, for naming in and out, for weeding. Surely the Lord is in this place. How often do we not know it? We're entering a fourth year together with me here. Facebook is reminding me that about 3 years ago right now I was in the midst of a move. Right? Those are fantastic reminders. Right? Twins baseball games. Pictures from the fair 3 years ago will be coming up shortly. We're in the midst of coming together for a fourth year where we've had 3 years of fantastic disruption. We've had wonderful honeymoon. We've had this great experience, for the most part, of sitting in the presence of God and of wondering what God's doing with this disorder, right? This chaos, this wonderful energy and spontaneity. And it's been good. I leave here all the time with a full tank. Not many people can say that about their places. I leave here with a full tank. And it is because I believe the Lord is in this place. And I know it because we have given ourselves room to discern it, to chase after it recklessly and relentlessly, to risk, to to try some new things on. And now we come to this fourth year, where it may be that we're tired. And it may be that we want to settle into roles. And it may be that we want to clarify expectations. And it may be that we prefer a rut to a wandering field. It may be that we would love to create way more disorder, or more order out of the disorder. And it may well be that we want to start weeding, clean up the garden. It may be that we want to lean back to focusing on problems. It may be that we would prefer to focus on what isn't working rather than what is working. And it may be that we'd like to get rid of the undertow, the weeds, the stuff that just ain't supposed to be here because it doesn't seem to fit. And it may be that we'd like to narrow our vision again. I get that. Organizations do that. Communities do that. But I would love it. I would love it if we could take to heart what we've heard this morning, which is a request not to do that. Not to seek too much order for the sake of calming the chaos. Not to seek too much clarity lest we lose the possibility that God is up to something we can't even ask or imagine. It would be great if we could remain nimble and supple and courageous and creative. But we've got to choose that. We have to choose that every week of every year, that we're going to chase after God and be open to the possibility that God is in the chaos, that God is in the disorder, that even knowing that shapes us to be in the presence of it. When you think about your worldview, and you think about how you know when things will be headed the right direction, it's worth asking yourself, what will that feel like? How will I feel when I think things are headed the right direction? Will it feel like absolute clarity? Will I know who's with me and who's against me? Will I know who the weeds are? That stuff drives us powerfully. Who is worthy and who's unworthy of our care and concern? Who is worthy or unworthy of God's care and concern? That instinct drives us powerfully. And we're asked as people of God, faithful tenders of the garden, to be patient, to be kind and gentle and compassionate, to have our eyes and our hearts wide open, lest we jump to the wrong conclusion too quickly and lose sight of the God who is here among us right now. It is a disposition of the heart. It's a disposition of the spirit. It's a particular set of eyes and ears. It's a heart and mind that is open to wonder, to new possibilities, and to adventure.